This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Matt, welcome to the Jason Rice Show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on today. Look forward to talking with you.
Well, I'm really excited. Like I said before we came on, look, I got to tell you something, man. The best part of having a podcast is that I get to talk to cool people and get answers to questions that I otherwise probably wouldn't. And like, today is one of those days. You own one of the most successful and historically rich organic farms in the country. And as I told you before we got on, Jemlyn and I, we just bought some acreage out north of where we live here in Tyler. And our goal is to do organic or regenerative farming. It's something, but also I know I have absolutely no green thumb whatsoever. And so I want to learn about your business, the history. I know just doing the research before we came on, man, what a journey, a generational journey you went on. Then you had the Dean Foods deal, but yet you guys, you've gone up against, you know, like you mentioned before, Coke, Pepsi, these huge manufacturers of beverages. And I can relate to that. My wife, you know, we have a small retail business here in Tyler that she has built over the last going on 13 years. And so we have to compete with Amazon, this little mom and pop. And literally, I'm pop, she's mom, and she carries all the weight of it. But we have to compete with Amazon to maintain relevance. So I can totally relate to that. And I grew up in a household of small business owners and entrepreneurs. And so there's just so many things that I think we're going to be able to cover. But let's just start out real quick with some history on, because I know that, you know, Matt's Organic has a long history. So kind of bring us from where this began generations ago to the point where you are now chief uncle of Uncle Matt. So kind of give us a little bit of that history, Matt.
Yeah, I will. First off, congrats on your wife for 13 years in business. No matter what the business is, that's impressive. Just staying in the game. Most of them fail in the first couple of years.
Yeah.
So 13 years, that's a great track record. You're doing something right. Keep listening to her, right?
Absolutely. 100%, man.
Yeah, you know, I do the same thing. You know, my wife works with me in the business. I do a lot of listening with her. She runs the marketing and helps with innovation as well. So it's great. But yeah, you know, for us, I'm a fourth generation. It was in my blood, right? I'm fourth generation Florida citrus grower. So it was pretty easy for me to make the transition of, hey, what do I want to do the rest of my life? I'd grown up around it. But I actually went to college to get out of agriculture. I was ready to do something else. I'd grown up in the hot groves, working in the summers and, you know, basically doing all the labor, helping my dad with his consulting clients. And so I wanted something, you know, to do different and chase the business dream. But when I came back and started Uncle Matt's Organic, it was the perfect combination because it was my history and love for agriculture and citrus. And it was combined then with my business and entrepreneurial spirit that I got from the University of Florida and really what I had growing up. And so those two combined, you know, they tell you, find your passion or it doesn't feel like work. And that's what I was very fortunate and blessed in the early age to do. And so every day I get up, I still love it. I've been doing this for 25 years. I've been self-employed for over 30 years. And so it's what I love to do. And I can't see myself anywhere else and doing anything else. But, you know, four generations, I had a great grandfather that came to Florida in the late 1800s. He was turpentine. He farmed vegetables. He did cattle. He did citrus. He did all kinds of things just to survive, right? Luckily for me, passed the love for citrus on to my granddad and then to my dad and then to myself. I'm not really good on a horse. So the cattle part, you know, wouldn't have worked very well for me. but really, you know, the love for citrus and the love for agriculture and farming and just, you know, growing healthy food and then health and wellness It all just made perfect sense for me as we transitioned from generation to generation. And when I got out of college, I had a degree in business, and I had an opportunity to do, you know, some simple business stuff like selling software. I had business forms was another job opportunity, and none of those really felt right to me. But then I had an opportunity with one of my dad's growers, one of his clients, as a citrus consultant, and he was a German gentleman. And he said, "Hey, I've got a lot of friends over in Germany that are bottlers. And if you can help me find grapefruit juice and orange juice from Florida, it's really, a premium product, and we could do a lot of business." And I said, "Hey, that sounds fantastic out of college to start an import-export business. And I get to travel to Europe and have some fun." And so I was all in. Yeah. And I got to use the history. Yeah, at that time, my granddad was still alive. He and my father, they had, over their course and lifetime, they had amassed 600 acres of citrus. Unfortunately, in the 80s, 83, 85, 89, it froze and killed all of it to the ground here in Central Florida. So they became consultants. And so they had a lot of consulting clients. And one of these German customers was a grower, and he was really good at selling. So he went up and down Germany and talked to different bottlers. And I went up and down Florida with the connections that my dad and granddad and just being in the industry. I went to the 35 plus processors and talked to them about, "Hey, I want to buy, you know, not from concentrate conventional orange juice and not from concentrate grapefruit juice." And we put it on a boat. They would freeze it in 55 gallon steel drums. They put it on a boat. We'd send it to Holland. And then it would go down to the different bottlers in Germany. And that was really a lot of fun figuring that whole piece out. And I didn't know anything about organic farming at that time until about 96. So I graduated in 93. I did the import-export thing up until 2000 after I started Uncle Matt's in 99. And I had one German customer around 96, 97 asked me for organic. And up until that point in my life, I had no idea about organic. And he said, "I need biologic white grapefruit juice, Matt." And I said, "Okay, Mr. Noah, I have no idea what that is, but I'm going to go on a hunt for you. You're the customer. You're right, buddy. I'm going to satisfy you." And that's when I had the business aha moment. You know, everybody kind of has that aha moment with, "Hey, what is there an opportunity? Is there a market potential and demand?" And that was it. There was no Tropicana or Simply or Florida's Natural that was organic. And I fell in love with the farming principles of organic, going back to how we used to farm before pesticides were invented, more natural inputs, you know, from compost to growing your own cover crops that you would use for nitrogen, staying away from herbicides and the pesticides just made sense to me. I'm like, "Yeah, okay, why wouldn't that work? Why couldn't we do it?" And that's when I asked my grandfather at the time, you know, we all gathered around as a family, and he just chuckled when I asked him, "Hey, can we grow organic in Florida, Pappy?" And he just said, "You know, I was alive before pesticides really were invented in the 40s, and I can remember us farming and doing really well." He said, "You know, that stuff, those methods weren't disproven. They were just displaced by some new technology based more around production than necessarily quality." And so he got a sparkle in his eye. He got that glimmer. He got that same aha moment that I had. And he just was like, "Yeah, this is it, man. You go back to organic farming." A lot of those principles he loved. He loved disking the groves. He loved growing up a cover crop in the middle of it. He loves, you know, spraying with seaweed and fish emulsion and things like that and putting out compost. And a lot of those practices had just been replaced by ammonium nitrate and other fertilizers and pesticides that they were told were better. And to some extent, you know, depending on what your end goal is, it was working for him. But he just said, you know, the system and ag system had steered everybody into that direction, and it led to a lot of single factor analysis. When you're out there, if you have a pest, you get a pesticide. You don't ask why the pest is attracted. You don't ask why the tree doesn't naturally defend itself. And so organic was holistic, and organic was more of that. You really start with your healthy soil, start with what is the soil lacking? And how do you make it, you know, the synergistic? So when the roots are growing in it, you know, there's plenty of mycorrhizae fungi that can then get all the minor nutrients that you need, and the little, you know, anything from, you know, selenium to boron to zinc, all those small things, molybdenum, you know, the tree really needs that. It's no different than the human. You know, if we don't have a lot of your minor nutrients, you know, things don't, your full immune system doesn't work. A lot of different things can happen, right? So he was so excited. My dad was excited. And from there, I launched Uncle Matt's in June of 99 with just one little pulp-free orange juice skew. And off we went trying to, you know, turn growers organic. My dad had, you know, at that time only 5 acres left of the 600. So we turned that organic. And off we went for Uncle Matt's. And the journey was fun. It still is today. We've got a whole lot of things in between that have happened. So I'll shut up and let you ask the next question.
Man, what an awesome story. And the thing is, it's kind of cool too. This, you talk about a serendipitous meeting. So I'm right now, I have the capital raise sheet for some partners and I. We're starting a company called Authentic Health. The company's already started, actually. And one of the things that we are, you know, it's my co-founder, one of the co-founders is a guy named Dr. Gus Vickery. And his whole, as a physician, his practice for nearly 30 years has always been about managing the human system the way it was designed to be managed, and trying to either help people defend against all the toxins that are in our water, our food, and all these things, and to try to supplement, to help support in this toxic environment we live in. And along the way, educate people on how, why it's so important to get the toxic foods and drinks and everything out of your body. So it was crazy listening to you talk about how you farm to grow that tree with the highest quality nutrients so that it can thrive, right? And produce the best produce. Is exactly what you kind of touched on it. It's exactly our philosophy with how we want to build this company to help people understand the human system and how to truly support it. Now, there's some holes I want to fill in there, just because one of the things I like to do, Matt, on this podcast is get the entrepreneur's journey, which is never, it's, you know, there's no such thing as an overnight success. It's just overnight we realize the success that's been building for, in your case, generations, right? So whenever the German guy tells you about this organic, this white, whatever grapefruit, and you think, okay, you bet, I'll go do it. I'll go figure, I'll source the means to create this. Take us through, because that went really quick. And I know it couldn't have been like, how did you as an entrepreneur start to do the research and not only figure out what this was, but how you were going to actually make a viable business out of it? And what were some roadblocks you hit, and how'd you overcome them to the point where you got that, as James Altucher always talks about, getting that one sell. You got a customer, he said, go do this. So kind of take us through some of the bumps and the ups and downs of that.
Well, absolutely. That's a fun journey, right? So when you have your aha moment with any entrepreneur, you're like, well, this, you envision yourself ringing the bell on the stock exchange. Like, there's nothing can stop me. I'm going, you know, top of the mountain, here I come. And then reality sets in, like, whoa, I know nothing about first step. Like, what do I do from here? And I didn't. I knew how to source the product. Like, okay, I can find organic fruit, and I knew how to process it and get it, turned into actual juice. And then I had to figure out, I had to find a co-packer, you know, who could actually then bottle it for me. And then once I could figure that piece out, okay, who's going to actually buy it? You know, when you go to that co-packer, the co-packer's got minimums. So he said, okay, I'll run it for you. I'm certified organic. I'll do a run for you. But you know, the funny thing is, this guy was also a friend of the family. And he was a very wise guy. And he gave me some really good advice at the time, which was like, this is a disaster and you're going to lose all your money. And do your parents know that you're here sitting in front of me but with this wild, crazy idea? But what he didn't know is that, you know, I had a passion and I felt it was my calling. And it really, I knew that if I stuck with it, I was going to have a product that was really good tasting compared to what I thought was out there. And I thought that, you know, this is what I was supposed to do. And there really would be a niche there long term. So I persevered through that piece and I knew, all right, I had 600 cases I had to sell because it's refrigerated, it's perishable. And so in about 2 weeks, I'm going to have not enough shelf life on this thing where a retailer would want to bring it in and put it on the shelf because they have minimum dates. You know, they want at least 30 days so they can turn on the shelf. And so it immediately was one of the most difficult products to start with. You know, it wasn't shelf stable. Most of the shelf stable products, they have a year shelf life. So you have a lot more time to get out there and sell it for run to run. So I didn't do myself any favor in the beginning. So I knew, okay, if I got to sell 600 cases, who am I going to sell it? So I needed to go out and get stores signed up. So I started right in Orlando, Central Florida, my backyard. There was Gooding Supermarket. And at the time, I think they had a little over 20 stores, and that plus or minus. And then there was Chamberlain's, which is a little health food chain, and they had about 12 or 13. So between the two of them, that was a start. I knew, okay, I'm probably not going to sell all of it. How much can I afford to lose? That's the other thing as an entrepreneur. You know, how much are you willing to lose? Yep. You need to go into business saying, if I'm not successful, what's my tipping point? Before I would go bankrupt, before I, you know, my lifestyle's ruined, my family's ruined. I was fortunate at the time when I started that it was just me. And I was okay if I completely went bankrupt.
Right.
I wasn't, but I knew that it would just affect me and I could overcome it. I didn't have a wife or kids. It wouldn't devastate their lives. So whatever I did, I was solely responsible for it. And I was okay with that. And I also still had my import export business that was paying the bills. So I had something else to fund it. And so it was an easier risk for me to take. And I knew like, okay, if I lose this amount of money, I'm okay. But here was my amount that I was going to lose. Fortunate for me, I went out, I got Gooding's, I got Chamberlain's, and I found a good little broker, a food broker, that could help fill in a lot of other small natural food stores in the Southeast. So the little Chamberlain's market that was next to me, there was probably another 300 or 400 little mom and pop natural food stores like that up and down the East Coast that this food broker was going to go out, and he quickly started getting placements and got us to a higher level. So when I ran 600 cases for that first time, it was great because I got most of it sold and most of it out of there. One little funny story, the first big promotion I did with Gooding Supermarket, and, you know, I just thought, like, this is it. Gooding's was this, you know, it was the key premium retail chain down there. So for wherever you're at, it's like a Kroger or Albertsons or a Publix, you know, or the local Walmart for some reason, but it was the place to be, right? They were super high-end, big stores. And, you know, I had told all my family and friends, this is the, you know, this weekend, we're going to be promoting, we're gonna be demoing here. Come see me, you know, come buy the product. It's awesome. So as I'm on my way to the store, like that Saturday, the local grocery buyer calls and says, hey, madam, I'm here and I'm looking at your product in the cooler. It doesn't say Uncle Matt's on it. It says Pabbage. Well, so Pabbage was one of my main competitors. And oh, they also cool. Back at the same facility as me, right?
And, oh, wow. And
I had done everything right in my journey as an entrepreneur. Everything from A to Z, except at the very end, you know, I figured out how to do it, how to label it, what to call it, you know, all the things. That the guy in the warehouse mixed up the pal and shipped the wrong pal into the store from a big grand opening. So it was just one of those things like, wow. Okay, so I can get everything right, and it's still, there's a human element, and people do make mistakes. So we quickly pivoted like, hey, okay, no worries. I'll get another pallet over there to you. Luckily, it was right down the road, and it was salvaged. But you can imagine, you know, right out of the gate, whoa, I didn't see that one coming. I thought about all kinds of different scenarios in my head of things that could go wrong, but that one was not it.
Wow. Well, now let me ask you this. So, and it's, and again, this is crazy. I thought this conversation would mostly be just about me trying to get Jemlyn and I into the organic farming business, or not business, but just to be able to grow our own stuff. But also literally being right here at the early stages of launching this company, there's so many things like the co-packing. You know, if you're going to get in the supplement business, you're going to have to deal with co-packing and some white labeling and, you know, custom formulation and manufacturing, all that stuff. So a lot of the things you've gone through, man, this is really good. So once you, okay, so that was a snafu that you couldn't overcome, but you did, which, by the way, it kind of reminds me of the story of Sam Walton when he opened his first store and there were like watermelons blowing up in front of the the Walmart on its opening day. So whenever you started actually getting orders, you know, a lot of people think that the hardest thing is to get the product made, get it, like you said, get it labeled, get it packaged, get it into the store and start making sales. But then all of a sudden, once you start to see some success, then you got to figure out, how am I going to pay for the next level of success? What was your, were you bootstrapping this? Did you bring on investors? Was the company able to kind of, to support itself in those early days? What were you doing from a financial standpoint to make sure you didn't go broke and you had the money to keep the business growing to where it ultimately became where it is now?
So initially, I got a $20,000 loan from my parents.
Wow.
When I started the little import-export business and then got Uncle Nat's going, I got the company large enough on the import-export where it was able to make a pretty good profit. We were doing a couple $1 million in sales, just selling bulk juice to Europe and the Middle East, which was great. And so that was able, I was able to plan. I was a finance major in college. And so that gave me enough knowledge to be dangerous. About, you know, how to finance a business and how to grow it. But it did, you really, you know, cash is king. They tell you that. So as you're growing the company, I think the good and bad news for me is simultaneously was the good news was I didn't have explosive growth. By the time it took me 2 years from that, you know, date with Mr. Noy in that conversation in Germany to finally launch Uncle Matt's in 99. It took me a while to figure it all out, to really realize, like, gosh, do I want to do this? I mean, this is a lot of unknown that I don't know. And I had one of my close friends in the industry. He sat down on me at dinner, and I'll never forget. He's like, man, you keep going back and forth on this. Well, I'm tired of listening to you talk about whether or not you should do this Uncle Matt's thing. He goes, at this point, you owe it to yourself to try and fail.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, yeah, you know, you're right. I've done so much research. I've done so much. I owe it to myself to try it to see if it would fail. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was kind of the last push, the shove that I got from a close confidant to like, yeah, you're right. I need to go at least try and fail. I've done all my research. I knew there was some, you know, opportunity to market. Well, in that 2 years time frame, I had two other competitors jump in front of me, and they were big. Pavich was a big organic grape grower, so they could quickly get it out into their produce network. And then Horizon Organic, which is the largest dairy, organic dairy, they also realized the great opportunity and hopped in. But I was young and dumb, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not pulling out now. I'm just going to go ahead and plow forward. Well, eventually, Pavich and Horizon got out of the business because they weren't, they didn't have enough supply. They weren't rooted in the growing side of it. And that's what's our competitive advantage is that I could go out in Florida and with our grower connections, we kept converting, they kept converting growers and we were the caretaker, the agronomist, my dad and brother, the agronomist, and we took care of all the growers. We got them certified. We did everything from A to Z with them. And so it was a nice model that helped me really grow and build our own supply. And then we had citrus greening show up in 2015 and it changed the entire model. Again, in business, which is where we're at today, reacting and changing our course from a supply standpoint because of the difficulties with citrus green.
I got to believe that you're seeing some growth now because people seem to be much more keen on not only just organic. And that's one of the things that my business partners and I talk about is that with precision medicine is that people are more open now to organic and holistic approaches, precision medicine, you know, as opposed to where it used to be kind of woo-woo and, you know, only the granola people out there eating the organic and whatever. Now it's like, yeah, you're missing the boat if you don't really understand the impact. So I got to believe that's helped you. Has that caught, and I've got to believe that's brought more competitors into the space beyond those first couple you mentioned. So how are you able to maintain a competitive advantage in also a time that just, you know, the business landscape, man, it seems like, Matt, that like anything that's logistics and growing, whether we're having logistic issues or not, or an economic crunch or not, dude, you're relying on nature to provide your manufacturing in a lot of the cases. So what have been some of the challenges as organic has grown in popularity. It's become more acceptable. And just the overall economic conditions that we're operating in now, how have you had to adjust, and what have some of the challenges been to continue growing and keeping up with the scale that you have to endure?
Yeah, I mean, so you're spot on. The health and wellness trend has continued, right? And so from when I first got it in 1999, most of my sales deck, when I would sit down with a Gooding supermarket, you know, Publix and those types, it was about organic. What is organic? Why you need organic? How they farm organic? The premiumization of why organic was important. And my deck was mostly that, convincing the buyer that this is going to be a real trend. And I would show them what was happening with organic baby food. Mm. That was the one thing that really was the first mover. And then also organic spinach and spring mix and all those two things really showed them, oh, okay, it's real. There's a consumer role, and it happens to be that young mom, which that is like the key customer. You don't want to lose any supermarket. It's like, well, we don't want to lose that, that concerned mom to any competitor. So they would take notice of that. So fast forward to today, I don't even have one slide in any sales deck that talks like, what is organic?
Right.
It's just widely accepted. Everybody knows it, but it still is 5% of the overall market. It's still really small.
It's crazy.
And part of it is just, there's some consumer confusion around what still is organic, and also some supply constraints. And what I think for us, the biggest issue was always just, do we have enough supply? Do we have enough supply? Do we have enough supply? And so we would turn people organic, and it takes 3 years from the date of your last prohibited substance. So when we got into a conventional grow, and while it would be beautiful, man, this thing's producing 700 boxes an acre of oranges, we need it like yesterday. You need to wait 3 years to transition.
Wow.
So it was a long term. We were planning and putting it in the pipeline. So you couldn't have, we can't like, hey, we're growing 1,000% every year. You couldn't supply. So we've always been chasing good, consistent quality supply. And then on top of that, when greening showed up, up until 2015, we had amassed about 1,500 acres over three different counties here in Central Florida, what we call the Ridge, Lake County, Polk County, Highlands County, and probably over 35 different growers. We had a team of 20 on our agronomy team that would go out and do all the caretaking and everything. And it supplied all local mints. We didn't source from anybody outside of our network. And then greening shows up. At that time, I had private equity as a minority partner that would help us grow the brand and help on that side as the company was. I could see like, hey, I need more expertise. We're not just a mom and pop company anymore. So in 2012, we took some private equity money that really helped us. And they joined our board, made us more professional. We found institutional money to come in and help us buy groves. So I had an institutional investor that would have helped us buy 5,000 plus acres, which was fantastic. So I had it set up on the supply. I had it set up on the branding side. And then the little bug shows up, citrus greening, the psyllid. And I start noticing like, hey, our groves are not looking as strong. And our conventional guys were definitely not looking as strong around us. They were infected faster and went down quicker than us. But eventually we were like, hey, this isn't going to work. If we can't find a cure, we're going to have to change our course. And that's what we had to do. So literally today, most of our supply, while we're still headquartered in Florida and we're still looking for a cure, we farm about 80 acres that's left, and it's all research. It's all, what can we do to solve greening organically? They haven't solved it conventionally either. We get most of our supply now from Southern Texas, East Coast of Mexico, and California for our citrus. We hope that, that's hard for a fourth generation Florida citrus grower to set.
Yeah.
But it's really good. They're still really good growers. We have really good connection and partners, a lot of father, son, multi-generational farmers, which is great. And we tell them what we've learned in Florida and try to combat it in their different regions so they don't have the same issues that we do. But it's part of business, part of trying to survive. It's, you know, you strategically have to always stay ahead and ask yourself, well, what if this happens? We always would have concerns around freezes or, you know, natural disasters with hurricanes or floods and stuff like that. So we always would have a backup plan of, hey, I know the guys in Texas and Mexico. And so in case I do need them from season to season. But when it did actually happen, like, oh, no, this is not going well. Those relationships were already built as backup plans. And so it was a fairly easy thing for us to start working with them and importing it to Florida. And now we have moved our facility instead of co-packing in Florida. We now have our own manufacturing facility in Texas.
Okay.
So we have completely changed the business model again, yet again. So
are you down in South Texas?
So not South Texas. We're actually just west of Dallas, Fort Worth.
Oh, okay. Well, you're not far from me then. Okay.
You can come visit me out in the little town of Mineral Wells.
I know right where Mineral Wells is. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Well, that's good.
A little lovely tumbleweed town. We got a great partner out there. We have co-located our bottling facility and his water facility. So it's awesome.
Well, as a fifth generation Texan, that does my heart good to know that Texas is playing its part in Matt, yep. Uncle Matt's organic. That's fantastic. And that's one of the things that just as a business curiosity, you've taken on the private equity and the institutional money, which is always a tough decision. I know that because, you know, you lose, like you said, you gave up a board seat, but it sounds like it worked out well because you had some good PE guys that came in and that was a net positive, but also you're giving up some control. You give up some equity and all the like. And so it's always tough for a founder in particular to do that, but it sounds like it kind of gave you the bandwidth to be able to make this transition, because there had to be a financial hit whenever you're making this slowdown, this transition to kind of trigger those back up. So I guess my basic question is net positive on bringing in the partners versus trying to go alone.
We probably would not have survived the whole graining fiasco if we didn't have our private equity investor in there, because they had injected cash into our brand to help the brand grow. And instead, it actually went to saving the brand from the farming side aspect of what we were doing to be able to help us pivot to other suppliers.
Okay.
But they were great. They were great partners. They were patient, very patient with us. Greenmont out of Boulder, still really good friends with the board members that came on.
Yeah. Guys, my daughter graduated from CU Boulder, so I'm familiar with their team.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were very helpful. Took our mom and pop company. You know, helped us with KPIs and, you know, key performance metrics and really looking at, you know, managing cash flow and just good blocking and tackling on a business side, plus helping on just branding and things to think about and do. And they had a real passion for organic farming. So they were never looking to get out, ways to get out. They were looking for ways to get through it with us, which was great. And so, when it came time, you know, they had a 5-year kind of window on most equity. It does.
Yep.
2017, we looked at, well, what are we going to do? We were looking to replace them and find kind of the next great long-term group. And we were evaluating our business and it was pretty rough with greening and what were the next steps and the best things for our family to do. And we just decided, hey, you know what? We're not getting a ton of great offers to replace the minority stake. People want to buy the company. And we made a tough decision, but it was the right decision to sell the company. We sold it to Dean Foods, who was the largest dairy at the time. They were publicly traded on NASDAQ, $8 billion with a B company, 17,000 employees, 70 plus plants across the U.S. And so I stayed on with my wife. For 2 years, I had a 3-year deal with them to just kind of help transition. And I wanted to be a good steward of the brand. I wanted to make sure that our growers were, you know, still in line. And as we transitioned to the next stage, what that looked like with a much larger partner. And they're a very good partner. They were out of Dallas, Dean Foods. So I flew to Dallas every month to go meet with upper management. I was one of the, you know, top 40 leaders because of the small little company that they had bought in Uncle Matt's. And I learned a lot from them. They tried like heck, but unfortunately, they couldn't get out of the tidal wave of plant milk that was coming with the dairy. And they had a lot of assets. They have 70 at the time, 70 plus facilities, and they didn't have enough volume going through them. And so, you know, unfortunately, they filed bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And I would have never have guessed that when I sold the company to them. I mean, I could have bet everything on it. But we were, you know, took that opportunity to buy the company back.
Yeah.
And so at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, we were putting together a group to buy the company back, which is crazy. Yeah, I'm sitting in this little corner office, which, you know, this right here, I'm the only one in the office because, like, everybody work remote.
Right.
Come here. Humanity may not come out of this, but I'm here pulling the wagon for Uncle Matt's, and I think we're going to buy the company back. And I'm just sitting there, my wife and I going, is this wise? Do we want to do this? Like, we haven't got to, are people going to survive? Like, what?
Right.
But we love the brand. We love what we do. And I said, you know, let's try it. Let's at least put a bid in. And that's what we did. And at 4 a.m, my wife woke me up and said, hey, honey, guess what? You're getting the company back. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. Okay, here we go. We're back out again. So we rehired some of the same people we had before and a whole bunch of new people. And we've, you know, since doubled the business, and it's been a crazy ride. Coming out of the pandemic, orange juice is cool again. You know, realized, you know, vitamin C and the power of, you know, antioxidants in orange juice, hesperidin, naringin, things like that, that really help against COVID. We had some innovation that quickly we put out in the marketplace that was, we added elderberry to orange juice and we boosted it with C, zinc, and D.
Yep.
Real great natural things to do. I kind of joke that was my Covenator product. And it helped a lot of people. It helped a lot of people, just basic nutrition, to get their bodies to, in their immune system, to really battle and fight and help. And so we rode a great little immunity vitamin C wave coming out of the pandemic. And so we've taken that momentum and just continued to innovate and do great things with Uncle Matt's, and just really proud of our team and how far we've come. And now we're a self-manufacturer, which is a whole nother game.
Yeah.
You're talking about a plant and efficiencies and everything that goes along with being that and doing that. But we're ready for it. We love it. I could stay out there in that little town of Mineral Wells. It's kind of my Disney World now. Now I joke, hey, it's like my kid's like, you're going to your Disney World, Dad? Yep, I'm heading out to the plant. It's a lot of fun.
Well, man, what a great story. You know, I had a friend of mine, their family was much like yours. It was a prepackaged barbecue company in East Texas that they sold to private equity. And it wasn't the Dean's type situation. This was just, I think, essentially bad management. And so they ended up buying the company back, and they were glad to buy it back. It was kind of the same thing. It fell back in their hands. They were glad they were able to protect the brand and bring it back. And so it was a really happy ending. So congratulations, man, first of all, on being in a position to be able to make that move and then executing it. How cool of a story is that? That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, we are very fortunate. I'll let it say, I'm, you know, God has smiled on me numerous times in my life, and I'm very lucky in it.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about organic, because, and the health benefits are there, but I want to know some of the challenges. And I mean, and you can, if you want, I mean, let's just take this as a tutorial. I have, sure. I'm in East Texas. I've got good water, good sunshine, pretty mild climate. I've got about 30 acres. And I want to start doing organic farming. I'm probably going to grow, Matt, vegetables. I probably don't, probably the best place to grow oranges out here in Texas, you know, in East Texas, but I want to grow vegetables. Sure. And I want everything to be as regenerative as possible. I want to keep the pesticides out. So kind of for that person out there. And then take this also from guiding me, but also you as a big scale organic producer, challenges and the things that you're constantly having to look at to make sure you're maintaining the proper metrics to not only just meet the standards for organic, but to meet them at a high level. Because I'll tell you right now, as just a lay person consumer, when I go to the store, there's two things that concern me. One, kind of weird. If I see something that's marked organic and it's priced pretty competitively, instead of being happy about the competitive price, I think, what corner are they cutting? That's just my mindset. I'm like, okay, what are they really organic, or are they just have lobbyists that have helped them figure out how to check the boxes creatively. And two, when it comes to organic, I just want to know what the best is. That's it. I want to know what it is. Organic is organic, or is organic, or are not all organics created equally? I think that's the question that I want to say. I know I threw a lot there, but kind of take from small to scale.
Like in any business, there's kind of what you can do, and then there are things that are much more higher than that bar, right? So kind of like, here's the average, right? So if you just wanted to be an average organic farmer, you literally could say, hey, all I need to do is not have any inputs. My land is basically fallow, and I'll just water it and let Mother Nature take care of it. I mean, and you could still, in theory, be certified organic. They really want you to have a program and a plan. So they want to see that you're doing some kind of inputs. So you would need to say, well, I'm at least putting down compost once a year. And depending on your soil, some places it's heavy enough soil, it's got great enough stuff. You don't need to do a whole lot more than that unless you really want to say, hey, I'm chasing production. I want to get a whole lot more production. But in Florida, we're sandy soil. So you need to do a good amount more to that sandy soil. So we do a lot with putting out compost. I mean, we would put as much as 10 tons to the acre and more sometimes. And you can either band it under the tree, or you could spread it trunk to trunk. We would grow, we'll grow our own cover crop in the middle, right? So like a cowpea, you'll grow a sun hemp, and then we'll cut that back in. And that will also give you free nitrogen, right? So it also feed the microbes. I mean, we think about the soil similar, because you said it earlier with health and wellness, right? There are a lot of parallels with organic agriculture and health and wellness, and you know, you taking supplements and exercising, the eating right and diet, and saying, you know, the buzzword now is microbiome, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it's no different in the soil. It's a microbiome in the soil. It's a microbiome in your gut. And you know, they're seeing more and more things are started in your gut. And if you don't have the right microbiome, you don't get things that go, you know, all the way the access to your brain, to turn on your immune system, to help battle inflammation, all those things starts with your gut. Yep. And then it starts with what you feed your gut, right?
Right.
So same with the soil. It's literally the same parallel. So you start with a good soil analysis. We use an old method called the Albrecht method, and we have Kinsey Ag is a great guy. Neil Kinsey, a good friend of us, and he's a Midwest farmer that we discovered 25 years ago about his methodology. Instead of using the pH method, you use his method. But it really gives us a starting place of where our soil is, calcium to magnesium, and then all the minors. And then you look at organic matter. So organic matter is how much water holding capacity the soil has, how much nutrient capacity the soil has that can hold. So when that root grows into it, there's something there for it, right? So it's not just, you know, hey, this is a palm tree in the sandy soil of Florida, right?
Right.
So, you know, we'll have really low organic matter down here, 1%, you know, and you try and get it to 2%, you know, and then there's places that have much heavier soil. They have 5+%, you know, 6, 7, 8%. So they just need to be able to release it. And you got most of your nutrients there for the tree if you can get it to release correctly and be synergistic with the soil. We find, you know, you asked what some of the biggest limiting factors with organic right out of the gate. And now we're in a subtropical climate in Florida. But whenever we would transition somebody, it's like, okay, we're going to warn you up in advance. You're going to have nightmares about weeds.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a nightmare about weed control because, you know, you're used to napalm in the ground, trunk to trunk, and just, you know, if it's a weed, we want it to be killed.
Right.
And so you've had to change your mindset that not every weed in there is an enemy. A chunk of them can be friends because, you know, they help when you disc the grove back in. Release biology and feed biology naturally in that soil. They'll attract pollinators when they bloom some of the plants that are growing there. So You first need to change your mindset on that. Your grove is not going to look like a golf course. You're going to battle some weeds. And that's going to be, it's our most expensive thing is battling weed control. There isn't a great organic herbicide that works systemically like what Roundup does.
Right.
But at the same time, Roundup is toxic.
Yep. It's
been shown to be, a cancer. And so that's glyphosate. Mm. That's the key ingredient there is glyphosate. We're glyphosate residue free. We get certified by the Detox Project. We go beyond just organic and get it certified as glyphosate residue free. But so those are one, you're going to always think about weed control. So on your 30 acres, you can do some spot spraying with some stuff that's like a hot vinegar mix.
Yep.
And it'll be a burn down. And that's probably good enough for you to go around and spot spray and do things like that. And we do herbicide trials, organic herbicide trials down here all the time, my brother, trying to get it a little bit better and a little bit better. But at the end of the day, we're still out there with a weed eater or hand hoeing the big clumps of guinea grass that get around the microjet sprinkler that will, prohibit the water being spread around the tree effectively. So, weeds are number one. Then after that, you'll be surprised for your backyard gardeners, your backyard little farmers. It's been amazing to see what Lowe's and Home Depot have done on a national level now, just going into their garden center.
Mm.
And, if you got a good local garden center, go to them, support the little mom and pops. But if you don't have a good local garden center that's got organic certified products, you'd be surprised what's now in the Lowe's and Home Depot's nationwide. And look on their label. It'll say OMRI listed, which is the Organic Materials Review Institute. If it's got a little OMRI seal on it, that's a nice thing, this would be approved for any organic. If I was using it for Uncle Matt's or for you using it in your garden.
Okay.
And there's a decent amount of little like derivatives of neem oil to spray for pests. There's some insecticidal soaps that will help against stuff. You can even do elemental sulfur that will deter pests. So there's some things that if you're a vegetable farmer or a fruit grower, there's some things you can do against the common pest pressures that you're going to have. Are they 100% as good as your synthetic chemical guys? No, not always. But if you get it holistically right, where the soil's good and it's feeding the plant right, and then you hit it with some of your natural botanicals or plant things to deter pests, you're going to have pretty darn good crop, and you're going to have one that tastes really good. It's going to be really nutrient dense, and that's what, from our standpoint, all the way back to my grandfather, he's like, what is our goal as a farmer? What is our goal as a grower? It shouldn't be just production. I want to grow more and more boxes per acre. That's great. It does ring the cash register, but at the same time, it's really about nutrient dense.
That's it.
Nutrient density.
Yep.
What's in that piece of whatever you're growing? How do you make it the most nutrient dense? And you can tell from just a Brix level. Brix is natural sugar. Mm-hmm. So like an orange would be, an average 11%. If you're doing organic and you're doing really good practices, it could be 12 or 13% natural Brix. And so what has that got? It's got more vitamin C. It's got more antioxidants. It's got more of your minors in there, that when you eat that piece of fruit down there in your microbiome, it goes, wow,
yep.
Okay. I haven't had, selenium or molybdenum or some of these minors in a long time.
Yep.
And guess what pathway that turned on in your body? Well, now that battles inflammation better. That helps your mind concentrate better. All those little things, you'll get higher antioxidant content. That's proven in organic research studies. So like blueberries, they showed you have higher of antioxidants in that blueberry. And what does that do when you eat it? Well, that helps your body fight disease better, right? The higher the antioxidant level, the higher the load. So those are what really helps me every day in our team, is like, that's what we're fighting for.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get into the part about, the residues of pesticides and the toxicity of those things. I think all farmers are great farmers. I don't want to demonize anybody from that standpoint. So we always just try, let's inspire people to turn organic. Let's inspire them to eat organic, and tell them about the benefits and the great things that come with.
Man, this is such an awesome conversation. I got to get you on with one of my Authentic Health Fridays with Dr. Gus whenever we do those episodes. Because we've got to make that happen. And one of the reasons that I just really perked up is because what you just described with the nutrient density of the food is, so Gus goes and does a lot of mission work in Uganda, and he works with a lot of children over there. And one of the things he's come back, and that's one of the genesises of our company that we're starting. He's like, you know, when I go over there, he said, if I could just formulate something, help sustain them, their food is nutrient rich. They just don't have the volume. Like they don't have the volume of calories. They do have good nutrients, but they don't have enough calories to sustain. Right. You come back to America, we got all the calories in there you could ever ask for, but we don't have the nutrients. And so
they're empty calories.
Exactly. It's just mass quantity. And so what he has formulated, which will actually be out here in about 6 weeks, is basically a foundational nutrition to supplement. So basically, if you're just eating the standard American diet, which hopefully you can improve upon that, but this is something to give you that foundational nutrient density that you need, because that's what a lot of people, and it's getting them in this mindset. Like one of the battles from a marketing standpoint that I could imagine in your business you face all the time is one of the things that we're going to deal with is that getting people to spend the premium for organic and getting them to understand by spending that little bit of premium, the long run savings for inflammation and different meds and, you know, all these different things, it far outweighs it. But again, it's just getting people in this mindset of, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure is one of the things we're going to have to get to. And that's why I love talking to people like you who just understand this from the body's functional standpoint, because, you know, in America, you know, our healthcare system is not healthcare at all, right? It's sick. That's what it is. It's built around sick care, and it's great. It's wonderful for keeping people who are sick alive, but man,
great for treating the symptoms.
Yeah.
But not really preventative and going after the cure. Right.
That's right. That's right. But I think that companies like yours are only going to grow and prosper. That's why we feel like we're entering the market with what we're going to be doing at the right time, because people are, they seem to be more accepting of the fact that, hey, I want to take care of this problem before it happens. And then you got celebrities like, you know, Peter Attia that has made all this stuff. And then you got Matt Camberline, who was on my show, who shared a lab at one time with David Sinclair, who, you know, Sinclair's had some issues here recently, but nevertheless, you've got these people, you got the general population that I guarantee you, that's why I was so excited to have you on, that are excited to hear a conversation between me and an organic farmer, because people are waking up. I truly believe that.
And you can do this in your backyard with your organic vegetable garden. So back to your question, like, so how do I do it, right?
Yeah.
You can go to that local garden community, that shop, or the Home Depot or Lowe's, and you can buy organic compost. And
that's if you can't find organic, you, too. Yeah.
You can at least get like a, you know, a compost of manure or a mushroom compost, some kind of compost. Fill up your 4x8 box, right? Just get the 2x10s and make it four, draw 4x8, put a little weed mat down below it, and then dump all that compost in there.
Okay.
You don't have to overthink it. Then dump that in there. Look at your little seed packets for your region. Okay, what time do I plant what item, and put it in there, water it once or twice a day, and you'll be surprised. Start with green beans.
Okay.
Green beans are like the quickest, you'll be like, man, I'm going to, Dad, you know what you're doing.
Right.
You won't matter. And green beans are pretty darn hardy. Like there's not a lot of things that eat them. You know, humans do, but from a pest and disease standpoint, you'll be surprised. You know, lettuces. Green beans, those are, you know, squash and zucchini grow really fast. Now they will get some mildews and things on them, but I mean, it's not that hard to suddenly go, wow, you know, I can do this.
Yeah.
And you get a couple of the organic OMRI approved for pest and disease stuff that you could spray on once a week. And you'll be surprised, you know, 30, 60 day crops, you'll have some pretty good success. With just that. And you don't have to put any more fertilizer down. Just use the compost. The plants will tell you like, whoa, this is great. And if you need to just keep refreshing compost, just put it in. But you don't even need to. We do a lot of community gardens. That's one of the things.
Yep.
And we just did one for a school. And, you know, people are like, man, what did you fertilize these things with? It's fantastic. Like you just put in a good amount of compost in the beginning and the plants love it.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to do that because I actually built a raised box garden for our backyard here a couple years ago. And we've had off and on success, and mainly the only reason why we hadn't had more success. I mean, Jimlin grows some great stuff out of it. We just haven't tended to it the way we should. But now that's, I may just clear everything out and just go back with all compost and do that. Just keep it simple because I probably overcomplicated it.
And check with, I'm sure Texas A&M will give you a whole list of things for your region from fruit trees that you can plant or not plant. Because, you know, I laugh all the time here in Florida. You know, we get some northerners that move in.
Yep.
And they plant all these tropical stuff and this, and then you have some temperatures in the 20s and those things die.
Boom, yeah. Gone,
frozen and finished. So just be careful of what you do plant from fruit trees and varieties because parts of Texas can be pretty harsh in weather and climate.
Well, one of the things and shame on me for not checking before we had the conversation. Can I buy Matt's? Uncle Matt's here in Texas. Do you have?
You can, stuff? Yeah. So we're in all Kroger, we're Whole Foods, we're Sprouts. We're working hard on HEB. If HEB is listening, we'd love that we're produced in Texas.
What about Brookshire's? Okay, so Brookshire's is the BGC. I'm a good friend of Brad Brookshire, the CEO, and that family.
Awesome. But
they're headquartered here in Tyler.
Yes. So we are presenting to Brookshire's. Actually, We're going through the review process with them right now. If you want to send a nice little note to the CEO, I would do greatly. And I would love to have him come down and you and him come down and you can take a tour of the facility. We'll have a good time together.
Consider that done. I'm going to text Brad as soon as we get off. And let me tell you something, Matt, there's not a better family you can do business with. They are
awesome.
Much like what this will resonate with Brad, I would think. They are, I think they're in their sixth generation as well.
Wow.
I mean, it's a phenomenal company, phenomenal family. They have done so much, not just for Tyler, but all of East Texas and Louisiana. I think now they're up in Arkansas. They keep growing. Wonderful family. I will be happy to do that. And then actually one of my mentors is a dear, dear friend of Mr. Butts. So, So I've got a good bank shot connection. But Brookshire's, man, that's gonna be fun.
We may have to change the picture on the label if you're able to do some of these things for us, right? I mean, you and your family buy whatever kind of tree you plant in the backyard. We may need to rethink this marketing.
You got it. Well, I tell you what, just put a little note down there, brought to you by the Jason Wright Show or so,
love it. We will absolutely scratch each other's back. That's another life lesson in business. Never burn any bridges because everybody's connected somewhere.
Isn't that the truth? And man, that's the cool thing about this little podcast, dude. I've had more serendipitous engagements and meetings from just bringing people together right here. It has been the blessing that I never expected. As the show's grown, it's like all of a sudden, it's nuts. So that makes my day to be able to make that little connection for you. And again, I would do it for you as well as just, I'd love for you to do business with the Brookshires because they're just awesome people. So.
And the other great thing about that is in the little town of Mineral Wells, Brookshire's just bought one of the supermarkets there, and now it's a Brookshire.
Yeah.
And you can't buy our juice. The only thing there is Brookshire's now in Walmart, and we're not in the Walmart down there. So people are like, where can we buy this juice?
There we go.
It's like the best juice you can't find in Texas out here. So,
well, all right. Well, I will put the plug in right now for Brad Brookshire with Brad as soon as we get off. And man, this has been great, Matt. This has been so fun. I think we've covered a lot of ground. And so let folks that now, can people order? I mean, it sounds great. Can you order your cheese? Like, how do people keep up with you? And if they've heard this conversation.
The best thing, just go to UncleMatts.com.
Okay.
We have a store locator, so a product lookup. So you'll put in your zip code, and it'll tell you to the store if there's something nearby.
Okay.
So that would be the easiest. Just go to your local store and buy it there. If for some reason you can't find it, we're in probably 15,000 plus stores across the U.S. You can buy us from Hawaii, Alaska, to Maine, to even down in Puerto Rico. So we're in most of the stores. Texas is kind of an interesting bird between HEB and Brookshire. There's a little bit of a donut for us there.
Yep.
But if you can't find it there, We also ship. We will deliver DTC. It's substantially more than if you can find it locally because of the freight and having to keep it refrigerated to ship it out. But we'll gladly give it to people anywhere across the continental U.S., whether it's at your local store or we ship it to you. And then we have multi-serve 52-ounce. We have 12-ounce. We have even little 2-ounce shots. And we have juice boxes, kids' juice boxes that are aseptic that they can take with them anywhere. So,
awesome. Well, I think your product is perfect for Fresh by Brookshire's. I don't know if you're doing for the whole thing, for the whole chain, but Fresh is kind of like our Brookshire's version of Central Market.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it competes head to head with Sprouts. We do have a Sprouts, so I could probably go to Sprouts and get some, but I like to keep my bit. I'm so glad Sprouts is here. I love them. They're helping the Tyler economy.
Absolutely.
But I'm loyal to BGC. So they're
awesome.
Maybe that'll be another reason. Hey, you know, Brad, yep. they've got this competitive advantage down the street. So, all right, brother. Well, Matt, this was so fun. Thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, likewise. I always enjoy talking to people that have a passion for life and health and wellness in agriculture. It's not often you can get all of those together, and this was it, man. So that was really cool, and we're gonna make a date. We're gonna see each other in Texas.
Let's do it. You say when, man. Let's keep in touch. I'd love that.
Awesome.
Thanks,
take care, man. Have a great day.
You too. Well, that does it for this episode of The Jason Wright Show. Thank you so much for listening. This has been a Texas Titan Media production. Fourth Wall did the music. And as always, thank you so much for listening. Please consider going out to jasonwrightnow.com and signing up for the Vitruvian Letter. Also, please go out to iTunes. It takes like 30 seconds to just leave us a 5-star rating. It does wonders for the podcast. I would be so grateful. And with that, until we meet again, go crush it and endeavor to improve always in all ways. I'm out.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.